I was going to talk about kind of how training is really dealing with resistance, but I ran across two nice stories that point out some of the points from a fellow Ezra Bod, who's a disciple of Joko Beck and a Zen teacher in San Diego, and he wrote a book that I was looking at, and he had one where somebody goes up to the Buddha and says, and starts listing all these problems, and the Buddha says, "How can you help me with all these problems?" And the Buddha says, using what is a traditional teaching, that there's like 83 basic problems, and you have, and no matter what you do, you're going to always have some of the 83 problems, and I can't help you with the 80. You know, I can't really help you. You know, you're always going to have problems. So the fellow kind of goes, "Wait, you're supposed to help me with this. How can you tell me you can't help?" He said, "Well, I can help you though with the 84th problem. There is no problem." However, that sounds. Next point is that sounds very nice that there's no problem, but what do we do with the fact that we are experiencing problem? You know, because it's nice to say no problem, but actually, haven't we all been with somebody who's falling apart, and when you ask them how they're doing, they say no problem, and you just look at them and you gotta go, yes, and suicide is no, you know. You know, it's like they lost their job, and it's like their partner walked out, no, I'm fine, no problem. So it's not enough to tell yourself that. It can be a good approach, but and it's not bad to try to not, but you also have to realize how you're suffering. It's like I heard an interview recently, I read an interview with this person for a while was a big movie star, and she kind of writes that suddenly she was in all these, you know, suddenly she had her breakthrough and was suddenly the hot actress and really big, but just as she became big, her boyfriend broke up with her, who she really cared about. And she just felt utterly crushed, depressed, and like her life is falling apart. But on the other hand, she's suddenly now a big movie, you know. She suddenly had this fortune. And she goes, "I'm so lucky." The trouble is, she's feeling like hell. And she felt like she couldn't even complain to anybody. Because how do you complain when you're suddenly the envied person who's, you're an actress, suddenly you're getting all the roles, everything's going your way. And it wasn't bad that she was telling herself, it's good that she was at least pointing herself to how lucky she was and how she shouldn't be complaining and all the rest, but on the inward level, actually it probably meant to her more to be, she may have very well cared more about being with this man than being famous. You know, or at least, and that probably had more concrete reality. You know, you're with somebody, and you know, you can see your whole life as the filter. Wow, I don't have this person to be with. Suddenly, you're famous. You can't even share it with the person. You know, so we'll go on to another story I have from this teacher, Ezra Bodre. He goes, an ambitious, longtime meditator comes to see his Buddhist teacher. As he sits down, the teacher asks, "What's the basic human problem?" Student ponders this and then answers, "We're not awake." The teacher says, "Yes, but those are just words. You're just thinking." And he sends a student off. And we all kind of know that. You can just say something and it's, you know, great. You know, life is impermanent. Great. What does, you know? Student's a bit disturbed because he was serious and had been practicing a long time. As they put in the story, ambitious, and he ponders, well, what's the basic human problem? And he wants to really get to the root of it. So he comes back a week later. The teacher says, well, have you figured out what the basic human problem is? Student replies, yes, the basic human problem is we think too much. We're identified with our thinking. We believe our thoughts. again, actually, it is a basic human problem, you know. But it doesn't really make much difference, you know. The teacher says, again, you're just thinking. You have to see the basic human problem in yourself. Student leaves feeling very defeated. So now he really wants to, he's struggling to get the right answer, and he starts reading all these Zen books and trying to figure out, there has to be a, what is the answer? Returns to the teacher, almost strutting, he's so sure he knows the answer to the question. Seeing the state he's in, the teacher asks, what is the basic human problem? The student says, there is no problem. He's so happy with the answer. The teacher just stares at him and says, then what are you doing here? In that moment, the student instantly deflates. His shoulders drop, his head droops, he feels totally humiliated. Peering at him, the teacher asks, what are you experiencing right now? The student, without even looking up, says, I just feel like crawling into a hole. At that point, the teacher says to him, if you fully experience this feeling, then you will understand the basic human problem. Which is from the inside, is the fact that you can talk all you want, but, you know, it's almost like everything's okay, but the basic human problem is how easily can it be, can you almost put a pin in it and deflate? You know, wow, I'm doing so great. Think of how easy that feeling can go away. Think of how sensitive, how much walls we do to protect this self, how much we invest in it. And if that's not the problem, I mean, if you can actually be hurt that easily, if somebody can just say to you, you missed the point, well, if there's no problem, what difference, you know, if you have that in your heart, then you don't care. No problem. You know, fully apply that. You know, and that, it comes up in a lot of ways in all of us, that either we pretend the problem isn't there, meaning we're doing okay, I'm doing everything, is one side, almost the adequacy koan that this fellow was almost trying, you know, he was trying to see, how could I prove that I'm doing really well in my training? And if you look at it, if you can actually, if something gets to you that easily, you're not doing well. And to give you an example of a similar story that's a bit more famous in Zen, is somebody goes to a monastery and he's training under this very famous master in China. And the master, kind of after a number of months, says, how come you never ask me any questions? And the student kind of replies to him, I think I understood Buddhism under my last master. And he said, well, give me your understanding. And he said, it's the god of fire is calling for fire. And the master kind of goes, if Buddhism was as simple as that, the way would never have appeared, and it would never have lasted for these thousands of years. And the fellow gets really annoyed, leaves the temple, kind of thinking, that was the right answer. And he's walking away, he realizes, you know, this is a really great master, and his disciples are really great disciples. Maybe I should go back and be willing to learn from them. So he goes back to the monastery, meets the master, and he says, oh, master, what is the true teaching of Buddhism? And the master said, the god of fire is calling for fire. And he was, oh, you know, and he was awakened. And it's not that the answer was wrong. It's the fact that it doesn't matter if you don't understand it. It's like saying, I'm not angry when you're angry. It's useless. I mean, it's good to tell yourself not to be angry, but you have to kind of go, I am angry. I am suffering. You know, I don't understand this. I'm not experiencing it from the inside, which is the only way you can do it. It's not an intellectual concept. It's how you relate to the world, which the teacher in this thing is pointing out how easy it is just to cause a being to suffering, and that's the problem. You know, we have to look at ourselves and just realize how much energy we've put into making ourselves not kind of protected from suffering, and how easy it is to suffer. And that is a, you know, that's not a little problem. It's almost like saying, like, oh, falling apart's going to be a cake, you know, with like old age and disease, when actually, no, that's, for most of us, that's going to be a problem. You know, we're going to find some either minor or major difficulty with it, there's a good chance, unless you really work hard at letting go. These are not easy things. And that's one of the downsides of a lot of the books on Zen, is that it almost makes you want to try to figure all this out with your head. When all you have to do is look, how do you interact with the world? Where, you know, what causes you to pain? What causes you to suffer? What do you feel you need to protect yourself from? And that's a problem, because... And, because in a way, a very normal way of coping with life is we've created all these mechanisms to protect ourselves, strategies, all in a way which prevents us from being fully where we are. You know, it's like somebody I remember telling me when they were practicing that they realized whatever they did in life, they always had a plan B. You know, everything, they always had to have... If this doesn't work, what is my alternative? And they kind of realized when they came into Buddhism, they should really stop having a plan B. You know, they have to actually just stick it out, you know, with however it feels. And not have it, you know, not, if this doesn't work, I'm going to do that. It's the same thing, you know, it's like good in a marriage not to have a plan B. You know, it's kind of like, yeah.
I've always got a plan B, but it's not for, oh, if this doesn't work out, or if I don't like this guy, or something like that. It's for, okay, the doctor walks into your hospital room and says, well, you're going to die. So plan B is, that's what you do. Plan B is, you meet and deal with what lands in your begging bowl, instead of what you think you want to do.
Well, there's on that level, but I guess I'm talking on a different level than that on plan B. I'm not talking on a practical level. Yeah, we always have to, if something happens, we have to come up with something else. I mean, that's life. I mean, it's like saying, you know, if the bus breaks down, I have to have a plan to do it. You know, but instead I'm kind of talking more about the direction of what we're doing with our life, which is the fact that if we make a commitment to something and we're going to do it, it actually works much better if we don't each kind of thinking, well, if this doesn't work, I'll do that. Because, I mean, and naturally you have to be very careful before you make the commitment and all the rest. But still, if you think about almost anything, you know, that is kind of the central part of it, is to make the commitment that and try to trust that it will work. The same way as on a practical level, you can just move it from the spiritual to the practical. You know, if you get, you know, in a way, we do that with our children, is that we can have a plan B with our spouse because we can leave them. Well, our kids we're stuck with. You know, it's like you can't kind of say, I'm going to trade them in, like, okay, this is too much. Or you have really bad karma. It's like somebody was telling me the other day where when his son came down with schizophrenia, his mother, you know, the fellow's former wife, just couldn't handle it. You know, she just couldn't deal with that much suffering. And in a way, and that's going to feel awful because it should, you know, you can't have a, like if you're in this much of a mess, I'm kind of going to wash my hands of it. But in a way, you know, just probably because it was just too painful to deal with that much suffering of somebody who has bad schizophrenia. And part of it, part of what we're coming up to is the fact that Buddhist training is basing on just fully accepting where we are and trying to have faith that what we really want isn't found in controlling the conditions, but is found by embracing the conditions and just dealing them with the best we can, and not making a problem out of, like it says, no problem. You know, you deal with it. You know, if my car breaks down, I deal with it, but it doesn't have to be a problem. It can just be, oh, you know, just like the plumbing downstairs works a lot better when I didn't make a problem out of it, and I just kind of recognize, oh, this is what plumbing is. It's, you know, as Ben kind of said, it's 2.7 trips to the hardware store when we were there, and we thought, oh, we did two trips, we're under the... How many trips you need to do. And part of it is the assumption of how we look at life. Often, a good example of how we frame our attitude to life is, life should be free of pain. Okay. Complete nonsense. Yet often, that's our framework. You know, things shouldn't hurt. Things should be comfortable. I should like things. It's like somebody I remember talking to who was like 50 years old and he's held endless jobs, and he says, how do I find a job that I find really meaningful and rewarding? And I go, you're working. the purpose of work is to earn the money so we eat food, have shelter, do those things. It's very nice if you can find something meaningful and rewarding, but that's, you know, the bottom line is you're working because it's what you need to be doing. It's,
you know, survive.
Yeah. And this fellow was having trouble surviving at this point. That's why I could say it to him at this point. His job history was keeping him from getting jobs, because after a while, you start becoming less and less employable as you keep feeling like, I don't want to put up with this job, I don't want to put up with that job. Life should be free of pain. Life should be free of difficulties. Again, training, you can kind of think of training like, okay, if I do this, life's going to be free of difficulties or not have difficulties. And instead, you change your attitude towards the difficulties. You know, it's like, let's say you're training. Your kids will probably have most of the same problems. You know, maybe you'll be a better parent, but still, you know, on the whole, they have their own karma, and even if you're a good parent, they'll have their own. You can be the best possible parent, and you'll still have difficulties. It's part of life. How you deal with them is how you cannot be bound by them, burdened with the difficulties, but you still have them. And there's a big difference between not having something. It's like saying, I won't have health problems, or I won't have this, or even that idiot concept that sometimes go, if you get yourself spiritually together, it'll heal what's wrong with you, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever in any tradition that there's been ever that practice has ever worked on any real basis, in the sense that, wow, people who practice don't get sick, people who do well are healthier than the people who don't do well. I mean, there are some things you can be healthier with, but you know, I don't notice, I'd be very surprised if the cancer rates are radically different. Heart attacks, maybe. It's having stress, less stressful lives, and you can do something about that. But and that's one of the reasons we have this great resistance, which is one of the key things to convert in Buddhist training, is a resistance to the way things are. You know, I don't want people to be this way. I don't want to be this way. Almost not realizing this is part of being human, that you have difficulties. You know, it's almost like we're asking, why wasn't I born an enlightened baby? You know, and you know, why did I have to have difficulties? Why do I want all this stuff? Why do I get bothered so easily? Why am I hurt? Why am I vulnerable? Why did I do all these bizarre things to protect myself from being vulnerable? And this resistance is often so ingrained that most of us automatically think this is being human. You know, so you don't even question that, you don't even realize there's an option to let go of this resistance to the way things are. I have to be bothered. I have to be scared. If something bad happens, I have to be upset. You know, I have to basically be fighting what's going on. You know, life is a battle. And just like it's very hard to let go of this point of view that a lot of things shouldn't be happening. I mean, on one level, there's a lot of, from a Buddhist point of view, a lot of things are leading to suffering, and yeah, it would be better if they didn't happen. But on the other hand, it's almost like, you know, you know, that's part of the way things are. Like, you know, a few weeks ago I went around and I had a beehive in my dryer vent. The screen fell out and suddenly there was a hive of bees in the wall by my dryer vent, you know, kind of deep in the wall. And they kind of, so I kind of let it go for a little bit. And I realized, oh, I can't have a beehive in the wall there. You know, it just won't work. I can't have this many bees around right there, right in our, kind of in the garage. So I got the spray and killed them, sealed it up, and thought, okay, that's that. And then just yesterday, somebody looks up and points out, oh, well, the bees are there. And there's a little space that they, in the screen, that they managed to squeeze through, that I was running an extension cord to the pump, the fountain pump outside. And they had just enough room where, so, and I realized, oh, God, I had to kill him once, and I have to kill him again. It's, you know, this is like a horror movie for them. So I took out the remainder of the spray, sprayed it, and duct taped the seam so they, and I'll see if this kills them. You know, unfortunate beings. And you know, we have to just realize this is part of life. It's difficult. You know, and you know, it's, you know, but if we take responsibility for it, the point of Buddhist training is we can convert all those difficulties and not make them a problem and find out there's no problem. But that takes a lot of work and it's hard to do. You know, just like it's hard to be present, it's hard. The reason we find it hard to be mindful and be present is we want to hold on to all this other stuff. I mean, I really care about what I'm, where I'm going to be tomorrow, what I did yesterday, or I don't feel comfortable here. I don't want to be with this uncomfortable feeling. All you have to do is look how, why you find it hard to meditate. What, think about it. It's such a simple thing to do. You sit down, you look at a wall, and you just try to be there. Why is it hard? You know, where is this difficulty coming from? And all you have to do is see how you either don't want to feel that uncomfortable feeling that's that is often there. You feel restless, you feel uncomfortable. Even if you feel more peaceful when you get up, often when you're sitting there, it's not always, wow, I'm feeling like I don't want to be here. And sometimes you feel like you do want to be here. You feel peaceful, great. But at times you don't. And that's true wherever you are. At times it's good to be there. At times you don't want to be there. Just let it go. What we're all looking for in our heart is wherever we are. You know, and you know, and we put a tremendous amount of effort into holding on to our illusions, holding on to our suffering. You know, because this is our viewpoint of how life should be. Think of how hard it is just to let go of your past hurt. Yeah. Think about it. On an intellectual level, is this a helpful thing to do? Most of us can say, nah. Should I be angry with this person? Nah. Should I still be upset? It would be really nice to let go of that. But then you say, but God, what they did was so... You know, or so, whatever it is, and we want to hold on to it. And practice just trying to be present, just trying to have faith that it's enough just to be where we are, to accept what's going on, brings up all our resistance to that very fact that we don't want to be where we are. We often want to be somewhere else. We don't want to be who we are. Often we want to be somebody else. We don't want to be feeling what we're feeling. This is kind of very normal. Why do I want to feel uncomfortable? You know, yet if you sit still with it and face it, it starts converting and you find the peace. Well, if you run away, it keeps trailing you. You know, like, how do you get rid of the restless feeling? You don't get rid of it by the worried feeling, the inadequate feeling. You don't. You can kind of push it away and say, oh, you know, it's a lot more comfortable to read this book than look at that wall. And all, most of us can relate to that, you know, or have another cup of coffee. And that's the problem, is the... And the resistance has many forms. It comes up in our lack of desire to practice. You know, it's like... it has the form of just wanting to be caught up in our dreams. It's a resistance. Wow. I know Buddhism promises me what my heart wants, but I also really want this. And get caught up. And it's not wrong to go after other things, but you're caught up in the dream. You're making a big something out of it. It's not like, wow, it'll be nice to have, be good to have this job rather than that job. It would be good for my body not to hurt. It would be good, you know. To do that. You know, often the resistance is suppressing or avoiding emotional pain, finding fault with ourselves, finding fault with others. All ways of, when you break them down, they're all ways of not being with what's there. You know, we blame, we criticize. They're all ways of just not being with it. So I don't want this reality. This person shouldn't be like that. I shouldn't be like this. And if that's what you are, then that gets to be a big problem. Mm-hmm. Instead of working with it, it's like, from a Buddhist point of view, nobody ever, you know, I mean, one of the most cheering things in Buddhism from my point of view is that one of his famous disciples was a mass murderer. So if somebody walks in and says, wow, I was a serial killer, from a Buddhist point of view, oh, you're just like Enju Gamala. He dealt with it. You can deal with it. It's just some rough karma. Anyway, any comments as I'm talking onward?
So it's kind of like the fellow that's always dreaming of the perfect job that's going to be meaningful, instead of actually doing whatever job it is that he's got. Wholeheartedly and really immersing himself in the job. He's dreaming about, well, if I only did this, when I got this position in this company, then, you know, I'd be doing meaningful work and life would be great. But he's missing the meaning in the work, which is actually doing whatever it is he's doing.
And not even seeing the patterns that are there that often, you know, like when we look at our life, we can actually see ways we've been resisting. Like, you know, I know people who've had trouble with their supervisors, bosses on every job, it seems, for 30-40 years. Some people in every relationship, the same things come out. Some people keep having the same feelings, the same problems, and they don't ever look at, like, really what breaks it down is they don't really look at what it is that they're resisting. What's really going on? What's the pattern there? And why, how come when there's a problem, instead of it being out there, what are they doing? What are they not accepting? Why are they not at peace? Instead, it's always, you know, and it's like, yes, it might be nicer to have a different job. Lots of things are nicer or not nice, but the story I always like is the fellow who went from being one of the top people in the advertising industry to just being making coffee at Starbucks, and he wrote a book, How Starbucks Saves My Life. And, you know, it's kind of cheery that, you know, because it's an example of where actually it was just wholeheartedly doing that simple job was actually better for him than, and it wasn't really the work, it was really his attitude of mind, and that work allowed it to be there. It's very hard to do that when you're running an ad campaign, you know, just go to work, concentrate. You know, it's a lot more complicated when you have endless pressures. You know, I mean, all you have to think is, you know, running an advertising agency. It's not exactly, it's the type of job like Starbucks, you can probably leave at work a lot easier. You know, kind of like you don't have to take your work home with you. God, I'm still making lattes.
did he have enough money though to survive on? Had he accumulated enough? Because that's a big. Difference in attitude.
I didn't read the book, but I think he had family money.
Actually, he went to the bottom without any money. He actually was totally. He'd gone through everything and ended up like in a flop house type place.
Oh, okay.
And was desperate for a job and waited a month to hear from the Starbucks people, and he went through all the stuff of his mind and the inadequacy, and he was terrified. He wanted that job more than he'd ever wanted any.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty...
Yeah, I only heard an interview. I didn't read the book. And cute thing is I always like using, I've used that as an example here before, but one of the things I love is there's this fellow who in a way went from being really important in the world to where, like, the interviewer kind of said, well, what would you do if some all these people who knew you when you were this big, because he was the creative director of the world's largest ad agency, so what would you do? And he was fine with it. And then they, when I heard the interview, I don't know if it's still, if it'll get made, but it's been optioned for a movie, and Tom Hanks was lined up to play him, so it's almost like it's gonna be, you know, there's the point of the thing is happiness was being nobody, and, you know, being working for Starbucks, and, you know, suddenly he'll be.
See, if you have that attitude, you'll end up rich.
Yeah. Tom Hanks will play you.
It was so bad that, like, on Christmas of 1959 or something, 60 or something, he had to leave his family because Lee Iacocca of Chrysler Corporation demanded that he come to a planning meeting, strategy meeting. So it's like the peak of...
Oh, well, that's one of the more pressure... I mean, that's one of the crazier pressure of things is advertising, because it's so ephemeral. You know, it's such a non-concrete thing that it can drive you crazy, because it's not even like your engine... You know, it's harder to figure out what is right, and, you know, it's so completely subjective, you know, to do something like that, that it makes it more pressurized, because it's harder to, you're going to spend all these millions of dollars on something that basically nobody really has a, you know, what? There's no really good way to judge or know if it works or anything. It's,
And then some young kid is going to come up with a new, fresh idea which completely blows away your wonderful advertising campaign.
And you have to even, who knows? It's a rough world. I mean, I've known people in the ad, you know, who actually worked at his ad agency. I know somebody who's a big, you know, somebody, an old friend of mine who's didn't plan on being, but ended up taking a job there and ended up, you know, now kind of been with them forever as an ad executive. Anyway, it's important to look from the spiritual point of view that all our lack of peace, and in a way, all our problems come out of our resistance to being with suffering and our feeling like this shouldn't be happening, or the conditioning we have, which is a logical conditioning, that I, it's wrong to feel bad, you know, to seek pleasure, avoid pain. I mean, think of how kind of grounded, just take a baby, you know, and just try to do something that they don't find comfortable in. It's like you get instant, like, suffering in its purest form. And, you know, then you give them something and it's like happiness in its purest form. And that's what we start with. And we have to condition ourselves to just not getting caught up in that. You know, to... you know, because all the patterns of resistance strengthens when we resist what's happening. You know, just think of it. You can even feel it when you're with somebody. You know, often what we're feeling it is a resistance they have. Like they don't want this. You know, I can even think sometimes, you know, I can look at somebody's face, you know, and it's like, and you know, somehow they're hitting a lot of resistance. You know, I mean, I've even done on work days, giving somebody a task and I look at their face and I go, okay, maybe I'll have you do something else. I can remember somebody used one of the toilets here and it was like, and it clogged and then it overflowed. And the fellow just...
What? Sorry, give way for... No, I'm kidding.
And the fellow just kind of looked like, you know, it was just appalled. And I felt like saying, but it's your muck. You know, why do I have to clean up your ears in the end? You know, he was just so appalled, I kind of realized, oh, I better deal with, you know, it's not a big... I mean, I had to deal with the clog, but, you know, it was just this feeling like, oh, this is awful. Just...
You know, my wife and I were just talking about this very thing with Parkinson's medications, because what often happens is that you go to the doctor and you've got a little tremor, like I think Michael J. Fox said that he noticed his little finger had a tremor. And anyway, the doctor, I mean, this happened to my wife. She went to the doctor and said, you know, I've got this little, it was very tiny little thing going on my hand. Doctor looks at her and says, you've got Parkinson's, you know, which was, you know, a major, this was not what she was expecting to hear. She thought maybe it was tendonitis or something, you know. But what's kind of developed is that what happens, apparently, for a lot of people is they go to the doctor, they get this diagnosis, and then, you know, the person says, well, what can I do? What can I do? And, you know, because they find out some of the horrible things, you know, the symptoms that you can come down with. So the doctors say, well, we've got this and this and this in the way of medication, and they pile all this medication on the Parkinson's patients from day one. I mean, they wanted to do this with my wife. And what happens is that there's some very serious side effects with the medication. I mean, these people really don't want to have any of these symptoms. They're painful, they're unpleasant, and they're an embarrassment in public. You know, when you're walking around and your arm's doing this, you know, people stop and stare. And so they don't want the symptoms at all, so they'll take the medication. But the medications have serious side effects, not the least of which is psychosis. That you have hallucinations and delusions of all kinds of things. I mean, I was just reading a thing this morning that paranoia is a very common side effect. But it's like they'll do anything to not have the physical symptoms, which, you know, it can be an embarrassment. You can drool, you can have this staring visage, you know, and this palsy and all these things. But they'll do anything to avoid that. And they're zombified. You know, they're psychotic. You know, we've talked to some of the people in the support groups, and you know, this one fellow who's only had it a couple of years, you know, gets up in the middle of the night and he's looking out and he calls his wife and says, somebody's stealing our car. You know, and she goes and looks out the window and there's absolutely nobody there, you know, so the point is that they'll do anything to avoid, you know, a little bit of pain. And it's like, you know, I think in our society, it's like we think that there's a pill that's going to relieve everything. You know, we've had aspirin and penicillin and some things, which we have gotten rid of some major diseases. Yeah. But, you know, it's like we want to pretend that these things don't exist or we can get rid of them with the taking of a pill.
Yeah. In fact, if you think, you know, in all of human history, it's only a little over 100 years that they've had a way to really kill pain. You know, I mean, like anesthesia, yeah. Real strong pain medication, all the rest, until then. You know, and think of all the times you can have sharp pain. You know, it's like, you know, we are very lucky, but the idea that there's a way to deal with, you know, it's almost like they should deal, something's wrong with the universe that, you know, our bodies get all these diseases, get problems, that there's, you know, whatever it is that's going around, that there was HIV, that there's this, that there's that. And it's recognizing it's just, you know, the body is going to fall apart various ways, and it's hard not to. But instead of fighting, you know, it's not wrong to do, you know, we want to do our best. If you have, like Parkinson's, do your best, whatever it is that's, you know, going to have the best result in your opinion, and you don't know. It's just like you can take the medications and then you have to pay attention. Is this a good thing to be doing? And that's always true. Whatever you're doing, you can't assume, you know, that it's, you know, kind of look at the consequences. But most of Buddhist practice starts with the cultivation of the faith that there's another way and it works. And you can't really intellectually, in fact, you know, if you just kind of laid out what I'm teaching intellectually, it actually doesn't make any sense. You know, there's nothing about it that's logical, like, wow, if I accept things, it's going to be better.
Reverend Kenry, I was just thinking how I started having some drug reactions, and I was really upset about it. And Kirk came over, and he reminded me that my upsetness was because of my attachment to wanting to be comfortable, wanting not to feel pain. And it was absolutely true, and it was a breath of fresh air, and I could then let go of it. Yeah, not totally, but
yeah, be better. Yeah,
and say, okay, this is where I'm at.
Yeah, well, that's,
and I think that's one of the values of Buddhism.
Well, it is a gift to have that intuitive sense and that way of looking in the right direction, because it actually does work. But I'm just saying, it doesn't work like as a way you can kind of lay it out. Okay, this leads to, you know, logically, like, wow, freedom of suffering comes this way.
It's a different kind of suffering.
Yeah.
Sounds funny, but the emotional suffering leaves, although the physical suffering is there.
Yeah. And the real suffering is the emotional, you know, is that suffering. And that's why once we let go of it, instead of fighting karma, just notice when we resist, what we avoid, what we fear, and just try to be more open with it. Because you can't, it's like, you know, just like if I'm in pain, you know, resistance comes up. I don't like it. You know, it's like, just like, you know, it's the normal resistance, and I'm trying to look for a solution. I'm trying to see what I can do, and that's normal. That's functional. We should be on one level trying, you know, pain's telling us something, and we're supposed to be It's part of life to respond to pain, almost like the way touching a hot stove you respond to and you learn from. But, you know, but just being open to what happens kind of starts freeling us from being feeling bound. And it gets, instead of being trapped in the problem, like trapped in the pain, the more we just accept what's going on and open our heart to it, the more spaciousness we can have around the problem. And the less bound we are, and the more freedom we see is just the arising. And also, it'll pass. It's just something where it's almost like bad weather. You know, just like our feelings are just like the weather. They come, they go. The weather reports aren't very good. I wasn't planning to feel lousy today. On Friday, so bright and sunny. Yeah, with me, short-term and long-term predictions are lousy. But you let it go. And
well, that's kind of where the suffering is, because, you know, today it's stormy, and but you remember yesterday, and so he said you get upset that, well, why isn't today like yesterday? Well, you didn't sleep well last night or something.
Yeah, there's endless karmic factors going on, and, you know, and the resistance is why... to being where we are is why we find it hard to meditate and practice. We want to spin off, blame, excuse, find something, find a pleasant dream to get lost into. The resistance works in the judgments. I am this. Of course I can't do this. Somebody, a common one, is somebody who came for meditation instruction. After the meditation instruction, he says, wow, I can't really do this. This is really hard. I kind of go, if it's worth it to you, you can do it. It's probably going to be hard. It's not like there's anything, when you break it down, there's nothing undoable. You know, it's like, it's not like you're not doing it if your mind wanders. It's just you have to accept it and just keep making the effort to bring it back. And we often resist what's going on by even judging our resistance. When you break it down, we do that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we're upset that we have resistance rather than realizing that's the whole path, is converting that resistance. I mean, without it, great. You know, it's like, you know, karma, here I am, come. You know, as Reverend Master kind of gave her expression, you know, I want to be a leaf being blown in the Buddha's wind. You know, just go where the Buddha blows me. And that's the ideal. Most of the time, I want to be there. No, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go, you know, just like, you know. But that's why bringing an openness that brings whatever's happening to us to the broader view of Buddhist training and the path that we're on, which is a big thing, not a little thing. And all these elements are just parts of the path. The fact that you don't want to be where you are often. You don't want these conditions. You don't want to be around that person, that job. You know, if I guarantee you, if I went into a doctor and found out I have Parkinson's, they would go, I don't want. I mean, sure, that's a reaction. This isn't what I was planning for the next. You know, that's not in my plans. This isn't the reality I want. I want a different reality. And of course, you know, and then we suffer. And then if we accept it, it's like, and thus people can be in all sorts of things, and they can be, often we look at somebody and think, how lucky I am and how much better I am than the other person, when often the other person's actually doing better than can be doing better than you, even though you're thinking they should be suffering. You actually don't even know that. They could actually be doing okay with the difficult conditions while you're actually having great trouble with the easy conditions. I mean, just like that movie star, you know, could have really hard trouble with what was pretty normal conditions, getting dumped. Like, wow. But of course, that can still be one of those things that can cause, you know, I mean, there's a reason why. I mean, without it, country music would almost disappear. You know, without a broken heart, you know, where would you, you know? You know, if you it's like, you know, she left me, but it's all okay. I still got my pickup. Anyway, I'll let people kind of end the talk. Nice to see you all.